Tanis gets up and he says, no, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that we should not shech the Maharal, but he's saying with the blood that before we brought before him that he knows about the blood of the girl. Now he's just saying nobody should take the knife to the Maharal. You're pointing to the Maharal, you have a knife to the neck, and he thinks you're going to go take the knife to the Maharal. He knows what happened to the girl, that was okay. He liked to drink the blood, but to take the knife to the Maharal, he says no. And of course now there's a big argument again in the courtroom about what the bum is saying. Is he saying that he doesn't want? Is he saying that he doesn't want to shech the Maharal, chas shalom? Or is he saying that he doesn't know anything about shechting the girl or what's going on? And there's a big tumult, and the judge takes now the golden bell and he rings the golden bell. Shh. And now, of course, Tadus gets up, and now Tadus gets up and he says, the side of the Maharal has nothing to say. They have not proved anything. And the judge says, we will now call Sara Marici to the stand of the witnesses. And Sara Marici comes up in front of the judge. And the judge asks, do you recognize these two men as the servants of the Maharal? And she says, oh yes, the old man, his name is Avram Chaim. He's one servant of the Maharal. And the other, who can't talk, his name is Yossel. I see him all the time. I know who he is. Even if it was dark, I would recognize him. That's him right there. Yossel, the servant of the Maharal. I see him all the time whenever I go past the Maharal's house or the shul, or sometimes he's walking in the street. I know who he is. That's him. I could recognize him in the dark. The judge says, you recognize for sure both of them? 100%? And she says, 101%, judge, that's them, without any doubt at all. And now the judge says, did these two men come to your father's house, Dr. Marici,
no,
before your holiday of Pesach?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, Passover? I can't pronounce Pesach. Oh yes, they came to my father's house. And the judge says, what did they bring your father before your holiday? Judge, they brought a jar of blood. And the judge says, and why did they bring a jar of blood to your father's house? After all, he's a doctor. Maybe he had to do something with blood. No, no. Had nothing to do with my father and being a doctor. And my father, it has to do with baking the matzahs. In the matzah bakery, he was missing one of the things. He had the flour and the water in the matzah bakery, but now they needed it to taste good, so he got blood. And the judge says, did they give your father the blood? No. My father gave a lot of money for the blood. And he gave them the money. And the judge says, and did you know whose blood it was? Oh yeah, we know whose blood it was. The servant girl who disappeared from the Jewish family, who used to light the ovens of the Jewish homes on Shabbos, it's her blood, for sure it is. And the judge says, how do you know that for sure? Well, my father asked them, Avram Chaim, he's the one that could talk. The other one can't talk, but he can't hear also. But my father asked the old one, he says, when it gets to be winter again, see now at Pesach time it's nice and warm, but then it's going to be the winter time. So my father says, who's now going to light the ovens? She can't light the ovens anymore. And he holds up the jar of blood and he points to it. She can't light the oven anymore. How could she light the oven? She's in the bottle. So who's going to light the oven when we're cold? And Avram Chaim winked his eyes and he said, don't worry. Hashem will send us another kapara when the winter comes and the snow. Right now, enjoy the matzahs. She's going to be real tasty. And he winked his eyes, And he took the money and he left. And my father took the blood to the matzah bakery and he baked the matzahs. And I couldn't stand it. So when it came Pesach time, I said, I'm not hungry. I don't want to eat the matzah. My parents said, you have to eat the matzah. You have to eat the matzah. I said, I have a stomach ache. I went to my room. I pretended I was sick, so I wouldn't have to eat the matzah. And they kept trying to get me to eat the matzah. And they're running around the house chasing after me. Eat the matzah, eat the matzah. I said, I can't, I feel sick. And then after Pesach, I was in my room. I ran away to the Green Church. And I went to Taras, and he saved me. Now, all of this is the Baba Maisa that Taras had taught Sara Marici to say, like a tape recorder playing in her head. And the words of Taras coming out of her mouth and her voice, just like a programmed computer. Or if you program a computer to say something, you can change the font. You know what the font is? The letters. It could be this kind of letters, it could be those kind of letters. It's exactly the same letters, the same thing. Taras taught her what to say, and instead of Taras' voice, whose voice is coming out of Sara Marici's head? Her voice. But whose words is it? Taras' words. And now the lawyer gets up and he says, let us call Dr. Marici to come himself. After all, right now we only have the words of Sara Marici and what she saw. She's the only real witness that saw what happened. Let's see if Dr. Marici himself will tell us the same thing. And there's a big tumult in the courtroom as everybody's getting ready. Let's see what Dr. Marici himself says. And the judge rings the golden bell and he says, it seems that about 2 weeks ago, Dr. Marici moved. He packed up all of his things, all of his furniture, his suitcases, the rest of the family, and they moved away, and nobody knows where they went, and their house is empty, and the doctor's office is empty, and nobody knows where Dr. Marici went. He cannot come in front of the judge, and the trial will have to proceed. You know what proceed means? The trial will have to go on without Dr. Marici coming here. And Taras gets up and he screams, and therefore, Sara Marici saw what happened that night, and Avraham Chaim says he doesn't know anything, he's lying. And Yossel can't even talk, and you see that he likes to drink the blood and eat the matzah with the blood, as he got very excited when he saw the blood. And whoever says that he thinks it's just mashke, well, they're not right. He thinks it's blood. That's what he thinks. I'll tell you what he thinks. And Kenalach, Taras says, it's time to punish the two servants, the Maharal and the Maharal himself, for using blood on the matzahs. And everybody is, of course, afraid what's going to be. The Jews are afraid what is going to be now. What is the judge going to do? All of a sudden, Kenalach, just at that moment. Now, this is very important. Because when things happen in our lives, who is in charge of what is happening?
Hashem.
Who is in charge of when things happen? Who's in charge of the clocks and the time? The Abishter is in charge not only of everything in the world, but every hour, every minute, every second, exactly when a thing happens. All of a sudden, Kenalach, as the judges now were talking about what to do and what is going to be the punishment and who to punish, and come to the verdict, the end of the trial. And the Maharal is worried because really the Jewish side has nothing to prove, and the other side has Sara Marici, who is lying, and she says that she saw this happen and that happened, and if the judges believe her, it's not going to be good for the Jews. All of a sudden, there's a big noise outside. And there's screaming. And there's laughing. They're screaming. Now, the screaming sounded like people that are scared. The laughing sounded like people who are happy. Now, it was a very strange sound because it was from hundreds of people. And there was a whole noise outside. It sounded like horses. It sounded like a wagon with wheels. And people are laughing and people are screaming at the same time. Now, if people are afraid of something, they're screaming. If people are happy, they're laughing. You heard both noises outside. And the judge rings his golden bell. What's going on? Now, it doesn't stop because the people outside cannot hear the golden bell. The people inside were quiet listening to what's going on outside, and nobody knows what's going on. And all of a sudden, the judges get up and they go to the window to see who is disturbing the court. Now, all of a sudden, they see this wagon is speeding on the road. Now, since there were hundreds of people waiting outside because they couldn't get inside, they were screaming because the wagon with the horses were coming right at them very fast, and they hardly had time to get out of the way. And those are the people that were screaming because they almost got run over by the horses in the wagon. The people that were laughing, they saw who was driving the horses in the wagon and who was sitting next to him in the wagon. And the Yidden were the ones that were laughing because they recognized Yossel the Golem. The real Yossel the Golem was driving a wagon. And next to Yossel the Golem was the servant who had disappeared from the family, and she was sitting in the passenger seat of the wagon, and they're coming to the court. And the judge yells, now the judges don't know anything, they say, who is that who's driving the wagon, and who is that who's sitting in the wagon? You're speeding and you're endangering people. We'll give you a ticket. We're going to give you a ticket for speeding and for disturbing the court. Come in here right now. Well, of course, the golem jumps out of the wagon. And the girl comes, and they're coming into the court. And the judges are busy trying to find their ticket books to write a ticket. Now, what had happened? I'll tell you what happened. The golem had gone to the four cities. He had found the girl. He gave the girl the letter of the Maharal, and she thought it was from her boss. She read the letter, and she took out all the money, and she saw, or she thought anyway, that her boss forgives her and begs her to come back and gives her money, and she felt good about that, and she believed that Yossel the Golem was a special man to come to take her back, and they got a wagon finally, and now the Golem drove the wagon to Prague, and he got there the day of the trial. But he did not know that the trial had already started, so he went to the house of the Maharal to tell the Maharal that he's there, or to show the Maharal that he's there. And he ran in. Well, the first thing he did was go to his room and take off his Goyesha clothes and put on his regular clothes. But he couldn't find his regular clothes because the bum who was thrown into jail was wearing his regular clothes. So he put on his Shabbos clothes. The golem also had Shabbos clothes. You have Shabbos clothes, the golem has his Shabbos clothes. So the golem put on his Shabbos clothes, and he finds out that the Maharal is by the trial, so he runs back to the wagon, and now, of course, he knows that if the trial is going on, he better get there fast. So he speeds the wagon through the street, and he comes now, and now he comes into the courtroom with the girl. Now the judges don't exactly know who they are. They're getting ready to give him a ticket for speeding and for making people in danger with a reckless wagon. And all of a sudden they come into the courtroom and the judges say, who are these people over here? And all of a sudden whoever's in the courtroom, the Yidden that know who it is, they get so excited and they're laughing and they're singing, dancing. It's Yossel the Golem! Okay. It's Yossel the Golem. And that's the girl, that's the servant girl who Tata says was killed and take the blood. Here she is. And of course the judges now sit down, they put away their ticket books, and everybody's good for tumult in the courtroom, and they ring the golden bell, and it's quiet now, everybody quiets down. They ring the golden bell. And now they bring up the girl and they say, who are you? I'm the servant girl who works for the Jewish family, and I came back because my boss forgives. My boss said he was wrong, and my boss sent me a letter, and he apologized for everything that he said and did, and he sent me money, so I decided to come back to my job, and I'm also going to go on with the job in the wintertime to light the ovens in the Jewish homes, because after all, they're very nice, you know, and they give me fish and challah, and they give me cholent and delicious things to eat and kugel, so I like that job. And who is this? And you know, so the golem comes up and his Shabbos clothes and he can't talk. And of course the Maharal says, this is Yossel, the real servant. Then the judge says, well, if he's the real servant, who's that? Now they look very similar, but the one that was dressed in the golem clothes, the bum, you know, he's looking around, he doesn't know what's happening. The Maharal now goes to explain, they call up the Maharal. And the Maharal explains now the whole chokhmah of what he did to find the bum, and he was arrested, and instead of the golem, and they changed the clothes, and the whole chokhmah of what happened. And the judges were so excited from the smartness of the Maharal. It says that the judge gave a cushy to the Maharal on the forehead. He kissed the Maharal on the forehead. And of course they saw that the Maharal and the Jews were innocent. Shh. Tadus. Of course, his face turned red. And now, well, actually, I should not say red. It says in the story, it was just like Haman after he got the garbage can thrown on his head. That's what Tadus felt like. Everything came down against him. Sara Marici was sent away to the North Pole for 6 years.
What?
Well, because she lied. She told a lie in front of the judges. She made up a story. She told a lie. Well, Tadus did not get in trouble. He went back to the Green Church, and he got in trouble later. Hashem took care of him later. But Sara Marici went to the North Pole for 6 years. There's a different story. That is the end of Dr. Marici. The Arizal, the Ari HaKadosh, had a dream on a Shabbos afternoon. It was Parshas Balak. And he woke up from the dream. He had a nap for 2 hours. He slept on a stone bed, which I saw. It's in a shul in Sfas. And that was where he slept. And he told his Talmidim that he had a special dream. And the Talmidim got very excited because the Rebbe told him he had a special dream. They'd love to hear the dream. Rebbe, please, could you tell us the dream? And the Arizal said, if you were to sit down and I were to start, I would tell you the dream. The Arizal said, if you would sit down now and I would tell you the dream, do you know how long it would take me to tell you the dream? Now again, he was asleep for 2 hours. And we all know, at least according to what the doctors say, that when you sleep and you have dreams, the dreams happen very fast. In other words, if you sleep for 2 hours, it doesn't mean you were dreaming the whole 2 hours. Maybe a few seconds out of those 2 hours, you were dreaming. Maybe over a few minutes' time, but not even full minutes. The Ari said, if I would tell you the dream I had, it would take me between 60 to 80 years to tell you the dream. And he only slept for 2 hours and probably dreamed just for a few seconds or maybe a few minutes. If I would put the dream in words, everything I saw in the dream, if I would have to put it into words, it would take me between 60 to 80 years to say over in words the dreams. Why? Because when you see something, you don't see it in words. You see it in the eyes of your mind. You see things in your mind, then you have to tell a person what you saw. Just like you see something happen in the world. You saw something happen, then you go tell about it. What you saw could have taken a minute, to tell could take an hour, because you have to put it into words to somebody that didn't see it, right? Here he had a dream. Of course, we're talking about a great tzaddik, the Ari HaKadosh, who had a dream on Shabbos with Ruach HaKodesh, and he sees all these things in his dream. Now what am I saying this over for? Because when we go to tell a story, of course we're saying words, but we have to first get into the story. We have to see the story there. Then, once we're in the story, and we're living in the story, so we give it over with words. We're putting the story in words. But the main thing is not the words. It's what's inside of the words. So I just told you the story about the Yiri HaKadosh, that he saw something beyond words, higher than words. His dream was higher than words. But to tell it over, imagine sitting every single day for 60 to 80 years, and you're just hearing about one dream of one Shabbos afternoon. Because your koyach of your mind, that's higher than words, can hold a lot. And to put that into words, to break it up, just to put it into words, to explain to somebody who didn't see all of that, is a completely different world, and you have to put that into words. Just like think about chocolate. Okay, you ate chocolate, you know what it tastes like. Now imagine that you met somebody that never in his whole life ate chocolate. Can you explain that to him? Try to put it into words? You can't even put it into words. Some things you can't even put it into words. It's so hard to put it into words because it belongs to a different world. The chocolate is in one world, the world of taste, that you know. How do you know it? Because you tasted it. Now you try to put that into words. Can you really give it over? That chocolate is like I'll tell you what's about chocolate. What can you tell him about chocolate? If he tastes it, he knows about chocolate. If you just explain to him, what's he going to know about chocolate? Well, okay. Say, here's a piece of chocolate. Okay, Fartik. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam she'akol nivra. Oh, now I know about chocolate. Tell him the whole day about chocolate, forget about it. It's a different world. Okay, pack up your stuff, we're going. There was a man, and he had a daughter, and unfortunately, the daughter could not walk. And they took the daughter to the doctors, and the doctors tried to help the girl walk. She couldn't walk. And he went to different doctors, and she still could not walk. Finally, people told the man, there's a tzaddik named the Baal Shem Tov. He's not exactly a doctor, he's a tzaddik, but he's a halakha tzaddik and he can give a bracha. And after a person did all they could in the regular way, and it's not helping, so go to a tzaddik, he's close to Hashem. And the man said, well, I don't know if I believe in those things. Maybe a long time ago such things happened, but not now. A long time ago, there were these big tzaddikim, like Moshe Rabbeinu, and they would stick a stick into the water, and the water would split, and they go through the Yamsuf and things like that. That's what it says in the Torah. But nowadays, it's not such a thing. People, rabbis, doing big miracles and stuff, doesn't happen. I said, no. The Baal Shem Tov, he could do things like that. And the man decided, after a lot of people told him, go to the Baal Shem Tov, he goes to the Baal Shem Tov. And they also told him, the way to go to a tzaddik, to get a bracha, is you should give the tzaddik some money. What does the tzaddik do with the money? Are you paying the tzaddik, or the tzaddik will use it for something halik like tzedakah, and in that schus, so you will be able to have a bracha from Hashem. Remember we learn about tzedakah? Mida keneged mida. You help somebody else. What does Hashem do for you? Hashem helps you. So you give the tzaddik money for tzedakah. The tzaddik will use that money for a halik thing, especially to help people. And in that schus, Hashem will help you. But the man says, well, I don't know if I believe in these things. I don't know if this really works. I'm going to give money to a tzaddik and he's going to do something. All the doctors couldn't help. And I went to the different places and different hospitals and doctors and big doctors. And they couldn't help. So how could this rabbi help my daughter? They said, try it, you'll see. He took a bag of coins and he traveled to the Baal Shem Tov. And it was a warm day in the summer. And the wagon pulled up in front of the Baal Shem Tov's house. And the daughter, she was already a very big girl, and he had lifted her into the wagon because she couldn't walk. And he put her in the seat of the wagon. And he went into the Baal Shem Tov's house and he just said, wait here, because it's probably not even worth it that I should carry you in, because, you know, I really don't believe this is going to work or anything. So I'll just go in because everybody told me to come. And I'll give the Baal Shem Tov the bag of money. And I'll leave. At least, you know, I'm going to give the Baal Shem Tov some money for tzedakah, and that's it. And I'll probably just come back and we'll go driving back home. And the Yid goes, and they, of course, he gets permission to go into the Baal Shem Tov. He probably has a shamish over there. And he goes upstairs. And the Baal Shem Tov is sitting by the window because it's very hot. And by the window, it's open. And the Baal Shem Tov is looking out the window. And the window was in front of the house upstairs. And the wagon was parked in front of the house downstairs. And the Baal Shem Tov was sitting by this window upstairs. And he's just looking out the window. And the man goes to the Baal Shem Tov and he says, here, I brought you a bag of money. My daughter can't walk, and people told me that if I come here and give you a bag of money, so something will happen for my daughter. That's what he said. So the Baal Shem Tov took the bag of money, and he's still looking out the window, and he threw it out the window. He says, you know, I really don't have any use for this money. I don't have really so much use for this money. I don't need any money today. And he throws the bag out of the window. Where does the bag fall? On the ground outside, near the wagon. And the man looks at the Baal Shem Tov. Didn't even look at him. The Baal Shem Tov is looking out the window. And he gets upset. Look, he takes money, throws it out the window. What kind of a rabbi is this? What kind of a person is this? A tzaddik? What is this? And he goes running downstairs. He wants to go. And all of a sudden, when he gets downstairs, he sees his daughter running around the grass, picking up the coins, because the bag fell on the grass near the wagon. And she's running around, picking up the coins, putting it into the bag. She couldn't stand? What happened? She got out of the wagon, and she went running around, and she picked up the coins, and put the coins into the thing. But the end of the story is, he tells his daughter, quickly, let's go back in the wagon and go home, because pretty soon the Baal Shem Tov might come out and he might say that he did this. It really happened by itself. You're picking up the money because, you know, you don't want the money to be on the floor, but the Baal Shem Tov might come out and said he did something special. Who knows, the Rebbe said, open up your eyes and see. Who ever heard that from the Rebbe? Now, does the Rebbe know that we have eyes?
Yeah.
Does the Rebbe know our eyes see?
Yeah.
Now, if we have eyes and we could see, Baruch Hashem, how come the Rebbe is telling us, open up our eyes and see, if we have eyes and we could see? What's the Rebbe telling us? Regular things happen. But they look like regular things. If you open up your eyes and you see what really happened, you'll say, look, this is not just a regular thing that happened by itself. It's something that's happening from Hashem.